Welcome to Monterey Bay This Week from KAZU News. It's Saturday, May 16th. I'm Katie Brown. Yesterday, the Bureau of Land Management rolled out seasonal fire restrictions on the Central Coast. The agency said this is due to dry conditions and high wildland fire risk. It's prohibiting people from activities including recreational target shooting and discharging fireworks on public land. There's no date set for when the restrictions will be lifted. With public lands top of mind, let me take you to Garland Ranch in Carmel Valley. Over 20 people gathered at the regional park a week ago to hear songs and stories led by the Ohlone sisters.
It is a beautiful, windy day, so if you hear a lot of wind, it's just the ancestors hitting your ears.
Carla Munoz and Desiree Hettinger are sisters, indigenous educators, and both hold leadership positions within the Costanoan Rumson Carmel tribe. The first song they shared was dedicated to the sun. Counting down in Ohlone, Munoz asked the audience to express their gratitude.
Imala, Utis, Kafes.
Hettinger also engaged the audience by explaining the significance of handmade artifacts laid out on a display table.
Can you all say tuli?
Tuli.
Tuli is so important to us because not only did it make our boats and our baskets, it also made our rooks.
The presenters unpacked the colonial history survived by the Ohlone peoples.
Monterey is the first capital of California. So the first wave of colonization that happened here was the mission system.
Munoz explained the Spanish utilized a Native American trade route from Sonora, Mexico to San Francisco, what is now the 101 freeway, to establish 21 missions across California.
And within 10 years, they brought 10,000 natives into the mission system, and only 143 survived. We are part of that bloodline.
Today, Munoz says 2,000 people make up the California-recognized state tribe, and in July, tribal members will return to Garland Ranch for a celebration full of traditional ceremonies. This week also brought strong reactions from local and state representatives about movement within the battery energy storage space. Here's Elena Neal-Sachs with those updates.
New Leaf Energy, the company looking to build a battery storage facility in Watsonville, has decided to seek state approval for its project, rather than wait for Santa Cruz County to finalize local regulations.
That's the one thing you do not want to have happen.
That's Monterey County Supervisor Glenn Church. Last year's giant battery fire in Moss Landing created a sense of urgency for Central Coast counties to adopt their own regulations for new battery storage facilities. Under Assembly Bill 205, renewable energy companies can choose to seek permits from the state's Energy Commission or from county governments.
AB 205 allows a company to go completely around a local jurisdiction and go straight to the state.
That's slightly harder to do, though, if a county has its own battery storage safety laws in place, a process currently underway in Monterey County.
I want something to happen as fast as we can because I do not want us to end up in a situation such as Santa Cruz County.
What happened there is that the county was working on developing regulations while New Leaf was actively proposing a new battery storage facility. Ultimately, the company lost patience, went around the county, and is now looking to the state for a permit. For Church, this reinforces the need to get a Monterey County ordinance across the line quickly.
People have a right to decide what happens in their communities. They have a right to have full input.
Still, it'll likely be several months before a draft ordinance comes before the Board of Supervisors for a vote. On a related note, on Friday, Central Coast Congressman Jimmy Panetta introduced federal legislation to bolster safety standards for battery energy storage technology.
And the State Department of Public Health is monitoring four Californians who were potentially exposed to the Andes hantavirus after an outbreak on a cruise ship. Aaron Malsbury has that story.
At a press briefing, Public Health Director Dr. Erica Pond said none of the four have symptoms.
There are no confirmed cases in California residents. There are potentially exposed what we call contacts.
Two of the Californians are being quarantined in Nebraska. The other two are being monitored daily in Santa Clara and Sacramento counties. California has never had an Andes hantavirus case, but the state has treated people with C. nombre hantavirus, which is not transmitted between people. Pond says for the Andes variant, prolonged exposure is needed for transmission.
And typically it is very close contacts, like people who live together, couples, or other things like that. And we are learning more and more about this cruise ship outbreak.
She adds that transmission has always been from someone with symptoms. There are no antivirals that treat hantavirus, but Pond says there are hospitals in California that are prepared to manage the symptoms. The California Department of Public Health is working with the CDC and other states to monitor exposures and stay prepared.
To round off this week's news, Elena Neal Sachs brings us a story about how members of the Iranian Student Union at UC Santa Cruz are making sense of what's happening to their relatives thousands of miles away in Iran. Erin Malsbury has the intro to that story.
For the past 4 months, many people with friends and family in Iran haven't known if their loved ones are safe.
I'm assuming they're okay, but we have no reporting.
The Iranian government cut off internet access inside the country on January 8th amid widespread protests. There were moments in the weeks that followed when Iranians could access the outside world, but when the U.S. and Israel attacked the country in late February, the blackout resumed. Now, despite the fragile ceasefire, many Americans of Iranian descent are left in limbo. KAZU's Elena Neal Sachs sat in on a recent meeting of the Iranian Student Union at UC Santa Cruz.
So we're halfway through the quarter.
It's a Tuesday evening in May. About 10 students are gathered in a common space. Once everyone settles in with a tiny cup of tea, Ali, a senior member of the ISU board, kicks things off with some announcements. And just a note, Ali is a pseudonym. We're using it to protect his family in Iran.
We have the beach barbecue. We're going to be cooking up jujia kebab.
At first, the announcements and conversation seem typical of any student club on a college campus.
Oh my God, bro, you're psych class.
They talk about midterms for classes that are very Santa Cruz.
I thought it was going to be more gender studies. No, it's literally about sex.
But for many of these students, it's a weird time. They're hanging out with friends and going to classes, but they're also trying to make sense of what's happening for their relatives thousands of miles away in Iran.
We have a film screening May 8th. It's on the Strait of Hormuz. Hopefully next year will be nice and smooth with no political events that you have to deal with.
Once the announcements are over, I walk toward the back of the room to talk with a student we're referring to by his first initial, A.
I guess you could say I'm two generations removed.
A is 19.
It was a little weird, my relationship with being Persian, because especially born 2006, it was about 5 years after 9/11, the racism against Middle Eastern people was very much still present.
A was born in San Diego to an Iranian father and a Mexican mother. He says every day as a kid, his mom would take him to school across the border in Mexico.
Because she didn't want me growing up in the U.S. as a visibly Persian person. She told me to, like, never tell anyone I'm Persian or Iranian.
He says now he's proud to be Persian.
Because that's just who I am. That's part of my identity.
When the Iranian government violently cracked down on protesters in January, A worried for his grandmother, who lives there.
The blackout of communication had me pretty worried for a good amount of days until she called us and she's like, I got, like, the last plane to, like, she got a small apartment in Dubai or something like that.
He says his grandma doesn't think the U.S. should be involved, but she supports efforts to overthrow the Iranian regime.
She's just like, this regime needs to fall no matter what. And then later they can work on how to overthrow the second one, yeah.
But the Iranian regime has not fallen. Ali, who was born in Iran and grew up in Canada, thinks the U.S. and Israeli war has only made things worse.
I think the Iranian people want a secular democratic Iran. I don't think they'll get it through America or Israel, given that neither has a track record of doing that in the region.
And unlike A, whose grandma left Iran in January, almost all of Ali's family is still there.
I have family that's in Tehran, and specifically in areas that have been bombed, and so no idea what's happened to them.
He says about 3 weeks into the war, his mom got a call from one of his cousins.
He's a CS major. He knows how to do the whole firewalls and VPN stuff. It was like a 5 to 10 minute call, just like them checking in.
And then the call cut out.
I was talking to my dad last week, and it was one of the first times I've actually heard him, like, voice anxiety and fears over what's happening. And he's very much a cards-to-his-chest type of person.
While President Donald Trump alternates between declaring the war over one day and threatening to obliterate Iran the next, students in ISU are left in a liminal space.
I don't want to say we're avoiding these conversations, but we're not directly talking about them, mostly because there isn't much to talk about.
He's tried to make ISU a safe space for students to get away from the news for a bit. But hovering in the background is the question, are our families okay?
And there's only one way to find out, and that's a blackout going away.
The Iranian government has been gradually expanding access to an expensive internet service available to certain professionals and business owners. About a week ago, Ali's cousin was able to use it to talk to his mom and let her know they're safe. But Iran has said it won't fully restore the internet until the war ends, and there's no clear sign of when that will happen.
That was Elena Neal Sachs. That's it for Monterey Bay this week. Thanks for tuning into our news roundup. This episode was produced by me, Katie Brown. It included reporting from Aaron Malsbury, Elena Neal Sachs, Ngozi Cole, and me. Our editor this week was Ngozi Cole, and our news director is Amy Mayer. We'll be back with more local news next week.